Welcome to the Whiskey Congress. Honest, open talk dedicated to speaking the truth to those who are open to hearing it.
Black, white, right, left.
Most importantly, honest, bold, and fueled by good whiskey. In Whiskey Veritas, we are Whiskey Congress. Join the evolution.
Welcome back to Whiskey Congress. At the end of the show, we will have a chip challenge update. The challenge has been officially accepted. Well, like I said, that's a tease. We'll fill that in at the end. We're drinking the rest of our Eagle Rare bourbon, which we've already rated. We also are drinking some Founders. Steve's got a PC Pils going. I'm drinking the Founders Porter. Mine's outstanding.
Yeah, the PC Pils is good. It's that light Pilsner beer that you could drink and beer snobs don't get all shitty with you.
You know, you are so right, and yet there's some people who will be like, oh, it's a Pilsner. Like, well, a good Pilsner is a wonderful thing. Some beer snobs will just, if it's not, you know, it doesn't have at least seven different kinds of hops in it, it's not cool. And that's hipster talk.
Yeah, my response usually is like, oh, but you've got man tits in a bun, so ew.
So when we last talked, I believe we both were prepared to talk about how, despite being accused of some pretty grotesque stuff and saying a bunch of stuff, that Roy Moore has been elected the senator from Alabama. But wait.
Yeah. So, I mean, I guess I can't even do a dramatic sort of entry with this whole thing. This one really beat me up a little bit because, you know, you have Roy Moore, who has been accused of some pretty atrocious things. Of trying to sexually touch girls that were as young as 14 when he was in his 30s. You know, I mean, you've got reports that he was banned from the mall by mall security because he was a troll.
I've heard that from multiple people. I never verified it, but I've heard it.
Right. I mean, I just see it, like, and I, you know, I'm not going to dig down on that sort of
story. I don't know how you do. Without...
Right. And it's just like, I'm not going to fly to Alabama and just, you know, start.
Hello, Camden Mall. My name's Roy Moore. Can I come into the.
Exactly. But, you know, you had some pretty bad accusations, but it went back and forth. You had the thing where Gloria Allred, where we talked about, you know, on our last show, you know, he had signed her yearbook, but then she added something after, so then that's forgery, and we talked about Gloria Allred and all that sort of stuff. And so there was so much back and forth. I couldn't come out with a clear idea of who I thought was going to be a winner. And then when you combine that with the fact that your polls were showing a 20-point spread. I mean, you had some polls that were showing Roy Moore ahead by 10. Then you had other polls showing that Doug Jones was ahead by 10, was 10 points up. I mean, you just don't see polls like that, which tells me that the polls aren't accurate. You have people who are just, when they're being called, they're just like, you know what? I don't want to tell a stranger that I'm going to vote for this sketchy guy. Or you had people saying, I don't want to tell a stranger. You know, I'm sure you had some strong Southern gentlemen and women and ladies who didn't feel comfortable saying that they were going to vote for a Democrat or they were going to vote blue. And so you didn't have a clear, honest picture of what the polls, you know, the polls didn't tell you anything of significance. And so I was left in a state of flux. My concern was that the Steve Bannon, Breitbart, conservative, you know, reinvigorated alt-right outsiders were going to come in and they were really pushing their message. Now listen, Doug Jones won, but he won by the skin of my dick. So it's not like this, like, you know, true. Doug Jones won going away. I mean, this was as close as they come. I mean, it was a 1.5% margin.
21,000 votes.
Right, I mean, so that's not large at all in the grand scheme of things.
No, it's not. However, so my night was interesting because I was hanging out at home, and about 7 o'clock, polls in Alabama were an hour away from closing, and I was like, I will go nuts sitting here waiting to watch these results come in. So I went to a bar that you and I have both tipped a few at in the past. Hung out and talking to some girls about politics and about our show. So if you're listening, girls, it was nice talking to you. And I came back here around 8:30, maybe 9, and information started rolling in. And it looked like it was going to be Jones, and then it looked like Moore had separated. And I was texting you like, you know, oh, this is bad, but wait. And then it turned. And I know I was just blowing your phone up last night, but
yeah, you started, and then other people started starting to hit me up. Twitter kind of took off. There was all the social media blew up, and it was a huge swing. Doug Jones had to make up for 200,000 votes, really, to catch up to and surpass Roy Moore, and the number of votes that the person in the seat before won by.
Jeff Sessions. Jeez.
Jefferson, Beauregard, Sessions. So that's a huge gap to make up. 200,000 votes is a huge gap to make up. And a lot of it was, I think, a lot of it obviously is this guy a pedophile? And the fact that we have to ask that question for a lot of people was enough to say, listen, I don't know. But the fact that I don't know, I can't vote for this guy, which I'm glad that there were those people out there. But a big portion of this, too, was a black vote.
I think the deciding factor was the black vote. I mean, it's a special election, so we're not even talking midterm. We're
black
talking
people don't vote in special elections or off-year elections.
Say people don't
people
vote,
in general,
and black people vote especially. Even in lower numbers, right. Yes. And so my question is, and I'm going to try to avoid over-generalizing, but I do think the allegations of sexual impropriety played a big role. But a lot of the others, if you didn't even have that on Roy Moore, just the other shit, the, gay affection should be a crime.
This guy said he was asked the question, when was America great? And his response was, when families were whole. Back when we had slavery, but, at least we had direction.
For crying out fucking
like,
loud.
What the
Those
fuck?
Words left his, I mean, oh my gosh.
It's just like, at that point in time, it's just like, all right, listen. if there's any person that can vote for this guy in 2017, you must be out of your fucking mind. That phrase, things were, when was America great? Shit, when we had free nigger labor, that shit was the best. You have no idea what you're missing.
You could get your dinner made for you,
they picked your cotton, picked and they sewed your clothes, they reared your child, the women, man, you could fuck them, it was great.
I didn't have to go creeping around malls,
right.
I
just had to creep on the plantation. And if one got pregnant, you just made the kid a slave.
Seriously, though.
He then said, he said this before. He said this, the statement I'm about to say, he said it before he made the slavery statement. He said pretty much any of the amendments after the 10th Amendment of the Constitution are useless. Okay? Now, Jim. Here's a little quiz.
Yes.
Can you name a couple of the amendments after the 10th Amendment?
Women getting the right to vote.
Ooh.
Black people being given the right to vote. Black people, slavery being abolished.
That's a big one.
Yeah, that's kind of a big
I'm
one.
I'm a little disappointed you didn't lead with that one.
I thought I'd set it up. Right. And then there's my favorite, the 21st Amendment, when Prohibition ended, which means if you didn't, I don't know.
Where does he come out on that?
Like, wait a minute. If the 18th wasn't necessary, then I agree, then the 21st wouldn't have been. So,
right.
And we could ask him that when he was being sworn in as a senator, but he's not going to be.
No, he's not.
I love this so much. I love this. It's because I was not kidding. I was dreading hearing Democrats, and I said this at the end of our last show. I said, Moore's going to win, and Democrats are going to say, this is great because this is something we can smear the Republicans with in 2018, and that would have been such a hollow attempt to salvage victory.
Well, Jim, you know how I feel about this.
I do.
Right? Like, I mean,
you
got to win. Now, I think I did reconcile a little bit that saying like this is bad enough where the rest of the country may hold this over their head, which you might get some traction from it, but it's still a huge loss.
Do it anyway.
Like, you can't, if you can't beat out a racist pedophile, right? Like, what a fucked up combination.
An out of touch racist pedophile.
Right? Like, if he, like, he's not, and the racism is not alleged. Like, that's just, he is what he is. The pedophilia, there's some question marks out there, but listen, I mean, some of those stories, I mean, there are some consistencies throughout those stories. The women don't know each other. That leads me to believe, listen, this guy, the whole thing with the mall, just his initial reaction, his response to Sean Hannity, you know, like, oh, I don't that necessarily.
Sounds of, that sounds like something
sounds
I would do
like
on a Tuesday.
I wouldn't necessarily do. But,
was
you
she
know,
cute?
And if I did, then that's not good. So I just...
Yeah, I'm with
this is a, it,
this
now,
was a
listen,
go ahead.
Democrats, Tom Perez, Keith Ellison, Team Democrat. What we saw in Alabama was a win. We saw a victory. In 2018, we're going to need more of those. Now, the issue is in 2018. The people that are up, that are running against us probably aren't going to be pedophiles, okay? So
thank you for saying probably, because you never know.
Some of the weird shit that's come out, and it's been mostly on the Republican side. Like there was a Republican congressman who just pled guilty to sex trafficking of minor children. Did you see that story?
No.
I want to
throw in one more Roy Moore. He also said Muslims should not be allowed to be in Congress because they can't be sworn in.
Well,
on
he
a
didn't
Christian...
say it, but his
campaign manager
said it, which it's just like it does. You can actually swear in on.
Did you see that interview?
I didn't, but someone.
Oh, it was hilarious.
Someone brought it to. Someone actually asked me, "Is it true you have to be sworn in on the Bible?" No, you can. What you pick? What if you want to be sworn in on the Torah or the Bible or
the Constitution,
or a
probably.
Fucking bottle of goddamn Eagle Rare. It like I mean, you know, I think if, it actually has to be a
yeah,
a,
I think
a,
it probably does
book,
have to be a holy book.
Whatever.
But I mean, it was comical because let me set the stage for those who didn't see it. His campaign manager gets asked, you know, you do know that you didn't have to get sworn in a Bible, you could get sworn in on a you know Quran or whatever, and the guy just freezes. And
there's a long awkward
and there's a
pause.
And then yeah. You knew that, right? It was just so bad. But yes, so
Roy Moore needed to fail.
Yes,
for the sake of this country, because even if Democrats played dirty, and you know they fabricated. The story, right? Like he had an affinity for, but you know, the story where he, you know, touched the girl in her underwear isn't true, but you know, everything else
right.
is true. Okay. All right. The problem is when you have that much information that is not, it's not proven, but you can't unprove it. Now I'll put an asterisk. I get that it's dangerous because then the way to defeat your opponent is just to throw a sexual, you know, harassment allegation at them or say that they touch kids, and that's an automatic loser. I don't think the Democrats said, you know what can we do? Oh, we can make this guy to be a pedophile. I think that the Washington Post got a legitimate lead on a story. I think that there's some truth and there's some gray area as to what really happened. It was a while ago. But I think that there's enough there to say that you got an older guy creeping on younger girls. And when you have a guy going into the Senate where you've got young interns and pages and everything else, there's a legitimate concern there where it makes sense that we probably don't want this guy as a senator, you know, on foreign, on budget committees and defense spending committees and all the different various committees that are in the Senate. I think there was enough there to say, you know what, I'm not comfortable with this guy. And I'm...
Oh, there were a lot of Republicans, I think, that were thrilled.
Yeah, there,
I mean,
there,
they
there
came
were.
Out and said it.
Right. I mean, his fellow senator in his own state said, I did not vote for him.
Right.
You know, I think Bradley, I think his name was, came out and said, listen, I can't vote for this guy. He doesn't make... I can't vote for him, and I won't work with him if he is... if he right. does win this election.
Right.
You know, and that screams volumes.
Yeah. Oh my gosh.
It screams volumes. I mean, because what, you know, listen, he's a fellow Alabamian senator who has
white conservative Christian.
Right. Like, he's got no allegiance to Democrats, no allegiance to anyone other than his white conservative constituency. And he's saying, listen, this guy, if we can't do better than this, then we got problems.
So there were two demographics that I thought were very interesting, or maybe not. Well, one was the black vote played a huge role. They said 30% of the people who voted in this election were black. And that's a huge percentage for any election, especially a special election
It was 08 Obama numbers.
Right. And when I heard that on CNN last night, I said, ooh, this is going to get interesting. That's when the texting really started.
Yeah.
Black women voted 98% to 2% against Roy Moore in favor of Doug Jones, which makes me ask, what's wrong with that 2%? But then the follow-up is, white women went 37-63 in favor of Moore. What the fuck? 63% of white women voted
for... Why do you keep saying that backwards, by the way?
Well, because I said it like in the same order of...
Yeah, I fine. Get it.
63 to 37 in favor of Moore.
Thank you.
That's crazy to me.
It's crazy. I think it's crazy to everybody.
White women essentially gave the same numbers to Trump.
Yep.
So grab him by the pussy guy and crank it out in front of a 14-year-old, allegedly, guy. Get two-thirds, almost, of the female white vote.
This whole thing with... And let me be careful how I phrase this, but let's stop playing this whole idea of women power and women are going to vote together and we can just assume where women are going to vote. We can't. All right. Like the last two elections that matter with Trump and Moore prove that white women, educated, uneducated, are not going to vote how you think they're going to vote. They're not going to vote for a woman just because she's a woman. And right. They're not going to vote for Hillary just because it's Hillary, because they don't give a fuck. And they're not going to vote against a guy who may have been a pedophile sexually preying on women. Like, they're not going to vote against. Like,
amazing.
If they have their own agenda that they want to see out. They are beyond the whole idea that women aren't empowered. Women don't have options. Women don't have equality. They're beyond that. And they're saying, screw you. I'll do what I want to do. I don't care. I don't want to hear about your need for equality. I don't want to hear about any of that shit. I'm going to vote my way. And they've done it in two major elections in a row. And I think the question is, do we need to go back and look at previous elections, you know, major elections, and look at how those women have voted? You know, do we need to go back and look at 2012 and 2008?
I think a perfect example is the Republican Party chose Sarah Palin as a running mate because she was a woman. Mm-hmm. I mean, literally, I had people who knew where I stood politically who were on the opposite side say to me, how are people not going to vote for McCain now? He's got a woman. And I said, I don't think people vote based on what someone's posture is when they pee.
Well, I guess at the time, though, it made sense because
Obama was
black people came out and voted for Obama because he was black. But that what people fail to realize is the uniqueness of that situation. No, we haven't had a female president. But for a black person to break through the ultimate barrier glass ceiling. Because I think more people were comfortable with the idea of a woman becoming president than a black person becoming president first. I think that people, if you were taking bets on who wins that race, I think there were more people who saw Hillary in that spot before they saw a black person in that spot.
Maybe, but I think also Hillary, and she gets to prove it again in 2016, is a really flawed candidate. And Obama was...
Yeah, besides all that.
Okay.
besides all that.
No, you're right. I mean, if you asked the question in 2007...
If you would have asked the question in 2004... Who do you think you'll see as president first?
A white woman or a black man?
Hillary Clinton or a black person, man, then everyone would have said Hillary Clinton.
Yeah, I think overwhelmingly, yes.
Right? I mean, and so, but And so that's why people went with the, all right, we've got a woman here. She's in, she's not the president, but she's the next
right.
seat up with a Sarah Palin. And I think that there was, it made sense at the time. I think if you refuted that at the time, I think it was kind of foolish to say so, because based off of the way the trend worked, it made sense.
Well, I thought it was oversimplified, and I called it.
Sarah Palin oversimplified it, right? Like, she just wasn't savvy enough of a candidate to really help carry him through. She fucked up so bad that it made it hard to vote for her.
And more so, she shot to the top. She became a sensation real fast, and then the curtain got torn down. I mean, she looked so good in the first 5-6 weeks that, you know, it seemed like the Republican Party had pulled a rabbit out of a hat. And then
she and McCain were just up against something that they weren't going to beat.
You're talking about the ticket or the fact that the economy crashed right before
they were up against Obama, who was the perfect candidate. There were people who voted for.
There was so much hatred, though, Steve.
There was, but there were. I mean, think about this. There were people who voted for Obama twice who voted for Trump.
True. Yeah, a significant number.
Right. I mean, like, there were people who voted for Obama twice that voted for Trump.
Yeah.
And so that's just who and what Obama was. Like, you can sit here and tell me his president, if it was Sean Hannity or a David Webb, he had a failed presidency, and Democrats and liberals don't want to admit it, but it was awful, it was terrible. Okay, whatever. But the reality is, in terms of a guy to vote for, I don't know if Kennedy would have beat him the way that went. You know, I mean, and given the circumstances, the next time around, I don't know.
We'll see. But so the future.
I hope I get the same support. Talk about a flawed candidate. Jesus Christ.
I expect an ambassadorship or at least a mid-level cabinet position. Okay. Secretary of the Interior, at least. All right. So let's talk going forward. So Stephen Bannon. Ends up being
Stevie K.
Stevie K ends up being a Moore victory would have made Bannon the most feared man amongst Republican candidates in 2018. Mm. No one would have wanted to go against him.
Agreed.
I think he is looking incredibly flawed right now. And he stuck his face out there in a way. I mean, yeah, he was out there with Trump and all whatever, but he literally pushed Moore over Luther Strange in Alabama. Trump had to backpedal out of that. And who?
And Mo Brooks. You know, remember, Mo Brooks was running, and a lot of people felt
I didn't know it.
Yeah, Mo Brooks was Mo Brooks and Luther Strange. Mo Brooks actually was the guy who was pushing and stumping for Trump. But McConnell backed Luther Strange. So Bannon and company found somebody, you know, further right than Strange, and they came up with Roy Moore, which that left Mo Brooks with no support. But Mo Brooks was the ultimate Trump supporter. He got on Trump's bandwagon early. So the assumption was that Mo Brooks was your guy. Now listen, if Bannon stays out of it, if Bannon stays out of all of this, then Mo Brooks probably ends up winning that seat going away. But because Bannon gets involved, directs Trump away from Mo Brooks, and then McConnell hitches his wagon to Luther Strange, and then Bannon says, all right, well, whatever McConnell and company does, then we got to do the opposite, and we can't
right.
be affiliated with them because they're the swamp and blah, 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 blah. Because of all that, they lose the seat.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, and that's just the reality of the situation. So Bannon's got to sit there and be, now listen, again, I go back to, I mean, they, you know, Doug Jones barely pulls this off.
True.
I mean, but
you know,
a win's
what?
A win.
Hey, thank you.
A win's
you're
a
not
going to
say that. I'll say it for you.
A win is a win, and my thing is you have to win. I don't care if you win by one vote and two recounts. If you win, you win. I attack these guys and punch them in the balls when they lose and they lose and they lose and they try to sell you these moral victories, this is a legit win and a legit victory. And it's not only the first one, right? Like, because they won in Virginia as well.
Right. And New Jersey. And New Jersey was a bigger one.
From governorships and everything else. So that, like, this is definitely something that Democrats can say, you know, can give themselves a high five for. But it was just a strange situation that if Bannon stays out of it, then conservative Republicans still have this seat and you still have control. Now, you're down one vote, and if you lose another one, then
you're even.
you're even. Now, you still have the vice president. True. Who breaks the ties. But there's a few seats up, and the job just got a hell of a lot easier to flip the Senate, the direction of the Democrats.
Also, I think that the power of the Bannon Breitbart movement took a huge kick in the balls. Did you hear what Peter? Oh, no, I told you, but Peter King, the conservative Republican congressman from Long Island, interviewed today, said that Steve Bannon looked like a disheveled drunk who stumbled into the political stage and does not belong on it, which I found to be one, hilarious, and two, he does look like a disheveled drunk. I mean, this is from a guy with a glass of whiskey in his hand going, dude, you look like a drunk.
Right, I mean, pot, meat, kettle.
Yeah, hey, whatever. I'm not disheveled.
Sure, you're very well kept.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
Very well kept.
Objection, sir. I am not disheveled. But really, he does look like that. His face is all over that. I haven't looked for memes yet. I'm sure they're all over the place.
Well, maybe. I just the look. Of, I mean, if we're going to, you know, critique Steve Bannon's look, it's
fair
atrocious.
Enough. Fair enough.
No, I will. I don't give a shit. I mean, fuck. I mean, I still can't get past Donald Trump and his ridiculous wearing the way he wears his tie. Bannon looks like a mess. Like, he doesn't care. He kind of looks like a recluse. He wears the drifter coat, or I call it the drifter grifter coat. You know, the corduroy with the inside lining, and it looks like the lining comes out. It also looks like he hasn't washed it.
That's a good line, drifter grifter. And, that's a great line.
Yeah, that's just what he look. You know, he's always partial. Like, he looks like he's always got a 5 o'clock shadow or 6, 7, 8 o'clock shadow. He's a little red faced. The pictures of him in the White House, he's in cargo shorts and a denim shirt and boat shoes. It's just like, my God, you work in the White House. What are you doing? So he definitely has that look, but don't let his look fool you. And don't let this is only a stumbling block for them. And he looks bad, and I don't know if they'll recover.
I think the look is partially on purpose. I think he wants to look like I'm not this
Agreed.
Uptight Washington
Agreed.
Guy.
But listen, he's a Goldman Sachs guy. He's a Harvard guy. He's a Wall Street guy. He's a guy who's made money in Hollywood. He's made money in finance. He's got Breitbart that he's taken. You know, Andrew Breitbart started Breitbart a long time ago. It went from something that some off the cuff. I can't think of the right word, you know, kind of underground,
oh, definitely
conservative, absolutely, you know, like, yeah, racist zone. To now,
off,
now they
off
literally
the grid, off the grid,
yeah, off the grid. But now, they've got a press pass to the White House. They get front row access to the president, and that's because of Stephen Bannon. Andrew Breitbart died in 2012.
Yeah,
you know, so this guy, don't take this guy as a lightweight.
True.
Or,
do not, yeah, don't.
And this isn't the end of Stephen K. Bannon. Now, can they recover from it? I don't know. But what I can tell you is they're not going to go down without a fight. This isn't the end of these guys.
But that's going to be the interesting thing. Because, like I said, I believe that Republicans were running scared from Stephen K. Bannon. And nothing makes the schoolyard bully look not so scary than watching him get his ass kicked.
Okay.
Right?
Okay.
I'm not saying that means he's going to lose, but people are going to be much more willing to punch back now.
Agree.
That guy's scary until he's not.
Right.
And maybe he should still be.
I think he still is, because I think the guy who knocked him out was a transfer student.
Okay.
You know, it was a transfer. Right. It was an exchange student who's going back home. Right?
Okay.
Like, I don't know the next time you get another gimme like that, right? I mean, what I mean is that Roy Moore, like Stephen K. Bannon, could you have picked the worst candidate? A racist pedophile, right? Like,
In Alabama, those things don't. But
fair.
He was on the right playground for that.
Yeah, but I mean, so the issue is, he's he's not a dumb guy, so he's going to go back, reassess, and he's going to do some more vetting. And the one thing Breitbart does, they can dig and they can find. Listen, they got some good reporters over there who can dig and find the information that they want and to find the information that they need. They made a mistake with Roy Moore. They didn't realize that the guy, and maybe, you know what? I don't know. I don't want to say that they didn't know, because there's some information out there from a while ago.
Yeah. I mean,
text messages, emails that show people knew the guy was a creep. Like this,
the banning from the mall allegation is
right. Like, listen, the Washington Post got this story for a reason, and they didn't have to go digging too far and deep to get it.
Two funny things about this, and then two funny things. From what I heard, the Doug Jones campaign did not go with a total smear, which I heard political. I heard political commentators saying, "Why aren't you doing the vote for me or vote for a pedophile campaign?" And they just didn't want to do it. And that could have come, had they lost, a lot of people would have said, you weren't willing to fight dirty enough. Okay.
I said it.
Okay.
And you know how I am about shit like that. Yeah. I don't like to smear and name call and everything else. And I don't know if I necessarily would have went the route of smearing. But I definitely would have had to bring it up. Like, listen, by the way, I mean, I represent A, B, and C of the good life. And by the way, this guy probably wants to finger bang your daughter. So... keep that in mind.
I'm Steve and I approve this message. Right. Would have been your...
right. I'm Steve and I wrote and approve of this message.
And hey. Yes, I got finger bang into another right. podcast. Well done, sir. All right. So the last thing I want to talk about this is the Trump response. So his initial response was, a passive-aggressive tantrum. It was, congratulations, Doug... Doug Jones, you were, you know, if it wasn't for the write-ins, you probably wouldn't have won, but you did, so good for you. You know, I'm combining tweets and thoughts now, but I originally backed the other guy because I knew Roy Moore couldn't win, and I was right. So, I mean, just it's a goulash of Trump deflection and still self-congratulation, but I would bet you he is seething mad at losing this, and I'll bet you he is blaming Stephen K. Bannon.
He absolutely is completely beside himself with the whole thing. I can tell you that he is... I was actually surprised at how composed his texts were. They did have that underhanded... you know, sort of, yeah, hey, congratulations, but really, you can thank me for it because, you know, I knew what the right thing to do was and I went the other way because I was talked into it. And but, you're lucky you got this one, but whatever. And so I guess with Trump's text, there's not a lot to dig into there. Although here's one thing that there's not much. I mean, come on now. I think at this point... part of the problem.
He is what he is, if that's what you're saying.
He is what he is. We know that he uses Twitter to get people worked up. We know that he uses Twitter to cause distractions, right? I mean, what did he do? What did he do Tuesday morning? What did he tweet?
I don't know. Support of Roy Moore.
No. He made a tweet about the senator.
Oh, Gillibrand.
Yeah.
That's, he said, okay, okay,
I mean,
right.
You know, I mean, he comes out and says, oh, she used to beg me for
beg me for money.
For donations and or whatever, or contributions.
Contributions, yeah.
And she'd do anything for him, right? He puts it in quotes or parentheses or whatever, anything, right? To make it look like, you know, she's like, hey, I'll suck your dick if you give me a campaign donation.
So let's set the stage a little bit. She came out and among four other senators and said the president should resign based on the allegations made against him. Mm-hmm. And that was his response to that was basically this political
she
whore.
Came right. Yeah. I mean, but she came out and she said that. I feel like she said that on Friday at the end. Or no, Monday, right?
Yeah,
Monday.
All
the women came out on Monday, right? So he saves it. For Tuesday morning, right? He saves it for Tuesday morning. It drops, you know, about 9 o'clock, right when all the, you know, Fox and Friends and Morning Joe and all those things are going on.
Sure.
And of course, you know, Mika Brzezinski from Morning Joe gets a hold of it. She loses her mind and blows it up, and then it just catches fire, and that's all everyone's talking about. You know, everyone is talking about this tweet and what did it really mean? And they're breaking it down. And who? I mean, listen, I could read that tweet and say, you know, maybe he's calling her a whore, or maybe he's saying, you know, she would sell out her constituency for cash, right? He used that phrasing for a specific reason, not because he didn't want to. He wasn't saying it to protect himself, saying, oh, well, I don't want people to think that I may mean this sexually. He intentionally wanted people to interpret it that he was calling her a whore, or he wanted to also give his Fox and Friends and Breitbart the ability to say, oh, no, he was just saying that she was going to sell out her constituents.
And how dare you go there?
And he wanted to basically light a fire under both sides of the conversation to distract from what the hell was going on in Alabama. That's what that was. Look at my shiny keys over here, and don't worry about what's going on over there.
Well, the fact that it came back to bite him in the ass was beautiful. Sarah Huckabee Sanders saying, you know, if you took it that way, then your mind's in the gutter. Shut up, Sarah Huckabee Sanders. I fluctuate so back and forth on really pitying her, because that job is brutal.
I don't pity her.
I fluctuate. Sometimes I'm just like, fuck you, Sarah. And then sometimes I'm just absolutely like, your job would make me drink more than I already do, and that would be impressive.
I don't pity her, because I know who her dad is.
Yeah, and she took the job. I mean,
and she took the job from Sean Spicer. I wouldn't be surprised if she had something to do with Sean Spicer leaving. I think she took the job. She wanted the job. She was already in that position. I don't pity her, you know, at all. I you know, no mercy for her. I'll be respectful. I try to always be respectful, so I won't say what I think of her, but
thank you.
No,
thank you, because I don't even want to go.
You don't.
I'm gonna stop the microphone before
dark,
that.
It's, but it's a dark place.
All right, so a little more White House news. Omarosa Manigault Newman is leaving the White House under really interesting circumstances.
Hey, listeners, all our listeners, right now, raise your hand if you know who Omarosa Manigault Newman is.
I know who she is now. I learned it today.
Okay.
Did you know ahead of time?
Yeah, okay. I knew. She was on The Apprentice before.
I learned that today.
And she's got some
undefined role.
I think she popped into the reality Real Housewife. I think she went from The Apprentice. I think she was on a couple of reality shows. And it was a big deal amongst the black community when she decided to join the Trump team in the White House. And I guess to cut it short, Jay-Z, OJ story, you know, Omarosa is like the queen version of, I'm not black, I'm Omarosa.
Okay.
You know, like my greatness transcends race. Like, oh, does it, bitch? Okay.
I was listening to CNN today, so I was driving around listening, so I couldn't see who the commentators were. But based on voice and the way she was speaking, I believe two of the three women in the conversation were black and CNN reporters. And one of them said, I know the other two of you are too dignified and too polite to say it, so let me just say, bye-bye, girl! I mean, they were dancing at her. And
what, okay, Jim, new rule.
What?
You cannot imitate black women on this show. I'm sorry.
I nailed it.
It banned. Banned Boom. For life. You cannot imitate black women on this show.
Twitter poll.
We don't need a Twitter poll. I'll call my mom.
Oh, no. Okay.
I will call my mother.
You son of a bitch.
And we'll get this resolved.
I just called you a son of a bitch when you said you were calling your mom. That went very badly for me at a bunch of levels.
I mean, you keep digging, buddy. No.
So, see that ball game the other day? Hell of a game. Wow. Anyway, there are not many people who are upset at her departure. And apparently her departure was...
I don't even know what to say. I don't know if she was fired or if she resigned.
I heard she was escorted out with security.
Okay.
I don't know if that's true or not, but I heard that. I don't know.
There are a lot of, there are people who are.
Your mom doesn't listen to the show regularly, does she?
Oh, she does.
Fuck. All right.
You got it.
Sorry, mm-hmm. Mrs. Davis. Very sorry. All right. Anyway, so carry on. I'm going to sit here and drink.
Okay. She'll get you in your sleep. Trust me. I know. Listen, I don't know what happened. I mean, I think there are people who are going to try to paint it. I mean, obviously, there are people who are going to spin it in Trump's favor no matter what. Like, oh, well, she was fired and she was escorted out of the building, or she quit, she resigned. Like, it's with every single other person in that building who's no longer in that building, right? We don't know if they...
The truth is she was an aide who we wouldn't know about if not for the fact that she had been on The Apprentice.
Exactly. I mean, it's like, it's really a non-story other than for most black people, we're just like, bitch, we told you. Whether you decided to leave on your own because you couldn't take it anymore, or they got rid of you, which we knew was coming, one way or, I mean, either way, this is what the end result was going to be. And I think for some people, the only surprise is that it lasted this long, considering the clip at which people were... You know, either being punted or jumping ship. Yeah.
She never made it a Deadpool discussion, but...
she wasn't worth it.
Yeah, all right. So we briefly talked about the senators calling for Trump to step down. Obviously, he won't. But the beauty of that is it will become a constant refrain in press conference. Oh, I bet it is.
No, Trey Gowdy shut that shit down.
How?
He said no. Like so he's the head of the committee that would have to do that, who would have to do the investigation into Trump's.
I'm not saying there's gonna be an investigation. I'm saying it will be a question brought to Sarah Huckabee Sanders daily.
Trey Gowdy shut it down, like basically said, listen, short of someone having a videotape of a blue dress.
Let's give me a blue dress.
I mean, of Trump doing the nasty with someone other than Melania at, you know, in a very precarious situation, there's going to be no investigation. Like, it's just,
honestly, it will not go anywhere. I just expect it to be a thorn in his side.
I don't think it'll be a thorn. Listen, we'll because see. They're spinning it. It's too easy for them to spin. And if I'm a Democratic operative, I'm looking at that and saying it's a waste of my time. It's a waste of energy. I have other ways that I can attack this guy.
Here's why I disagree. You know, it's just such an easy. It's such an easy jab.
As it is to jab, it's very easy to defend, and it takes no energy for them to defend it. So while you're saying it takes no energy to extend the jab,
exactly,
it's just a stupid little side fight not going anywhere.
Okay,
you know, I mean, so if you want to do it, that's fine, but they can continue to slap it away. And it doesn't really solve anything, right? Like
it certainly doesn't solve anything because nothing will come of it.
He's not going to be impeached. He's not going to resign. He's not going to be indicted. Nothing is going to come of it. And the longer that they go down this route, and the more opportunity, like the more opportunity the Trump people have to dig into these women. Then they'll play dirty politics and they'll rip these women apart. They'll go into their personal lives and they will put them on full display. And then the conversation will turn to what Trump did to them, to who and what these women are, you know, in their private lives.
You're not wrong. I'm not disputing that.
And so then the conversation will immediately flip to, you know, who the women are, and we'll completely forget about why we're even talking about these women. Like, that is how this goes. If they continue to go down this line, that's what happens. They will turn these victims into the people. They will put these victims on trial. And they will do it long enough to where it'll get to a point where it won't matter. It'll be either the end of Trump's first term and then he gets voted out, or it'll be, you know, it'll be into the third year of his second term. You know, God forbid that happens. It's a bad road.
In terms of effectiveness, I agree with you. In terms of thorn in the side, I think is here to stay. I'm not even going to say it's a good or bad idea. I think it's here to stay.
I'm telling you, it's a horrible idea.
All right,
That sort of petty politics, is so much part of the problem, right? So I kind of have to reprimand you a little bit.
Because it's a big picture, I agree with you on that. On the other hand, we're there.
We're there, so we have to do it. Fuck you. No, we don't. We don't have to do that. I mean, if I'm Tom Perez, I'm like, whoever the fuck has control over this situation, I want to talk to them. Right? I'm going Godfather style. You'd have them come into my office. We're going to have a closed door conversation. So I would shut it down. Right? And I mean, and listen, And if you're gonna say, oh well, these women are victims, and you don't know it, because I'm looking at some of these stories, right? And I'm looking at some of these stories, and I'm saying, listen, were you a victim of inappropriate behavior? Yes, you were. But you weren't like this. This wouldn't pass the muster. Like this, you wouldn't. He wouldn't be convicted of a crime in the court of law as things are currently situated or currently situated. Right, like this wouldn't pass muster. I don't even know if some of these things are actually crimes. And so we have to talk about what is actually going on here, and what is the point of doing this, and is it getting us anywhere?
I was watching the assistant deputy of the Department of Justice, whose name is Rosenstein.
Yes.
All right, I was watching that on TV today because I'm an exciting guy. And there was a lot of probing about, you know, well, if these women come forward and want an investigation, he was basically like, and this is from congressmen. They were saying, you know, well, will there be an investigation? He was like, that's not what the Department of Justice does. If there's a federal crime committed, we'll look into it. But so all right, if you're calling out that kind of stupidity, I'm with you. I do like the notion that he has to that they have to deflect from what a scumbag he is. Especially in light of Roy Moore going down, I see potential value in that politically. But I understand what you're saying. Having said that,
you don't need these women for that. You can just sit there and
going.
You could play the tape of him grabbing women by the pussy over and over and over again.
And it didn't work.
Okay, so but this isn't working. This isn't working. It's not going anywhere. Admittedly, anywhere.
To me, this is part of the constant pressure.
There's no investment. Okay, so you can put constant pressure on by using his own words, right? I can put constant pressure on him by using his own words. But this doesn't do anything except, like, this becomes easy to defend and flip. This becomes easy to defend and flip and distract and pull away, right?
This validates the whole.
This doesn't validate anything.
Grab him by the pussy tape. They're accusing him of doing exactly what he said he did, with a smile on his face.
Fair, except for I can't prove this, right? But and the problem is, you can say if I'm defending him, I'm saying that was however long ago. You can't prove that. There's no pictures. There's no whatever.
True.
What I can't defend is his voice and him saying I move on a bitch. And, you know, I put gum in my mouth because, you know, I just kiss him, you know, and you know, like you can do whatever you want.
But don't say you can't defend that because he got elected in spite of it.
But what I'm saying is that, okay, if you want to apply constant pressure, use his own words against him. This is what I would do. What I would do is continue to shove that tape down his throat because he's already starting to. What has he already tried to do? That's not accurate.
That's a great point.
So now what I do is. I fight to get him on the stand under oath to tell me that he didn't say what was on that tape.
If you can make that happen, that would be beautiful.
Well, that's the thing. If I can get Bill Clinton on the stand to tell me he didn't get his dick sucked in his office, I can get Donald Trump on the stand to tell me that he didn't say that he grabs bitches by the pussy and he just fucking kisses them and that they're bitches and whatever. I can do that. I can figure if Ken Starr can figure it out, I guarantee goddamn T that Mueller can figure it out. And that's the pressure that I would apply. The rest of the shit is a waste of time and energy. That's the button that you push, and you push it over and over again.
And so speaking of Mueller, one of the other questions asked of the assistant deputy was, should Mueller be fired? And every Republican was asking questions about, you know, can Mueller be trusted? They're playing this card that one of the FBI guys was having an affair, and he and his mistress were sending back and forth text messages and emails using government-supplied email and cell phones, making it clear that they were pro. But
how stupid are these people?
Do you really have to answer your own?
How frustrating this is? Like, really, you're a federal agent. You're having an affair, and you're sending these text messages across. Like, what are you doing? Right? Like, whether it was about Trump or Obama, how stupid are these fucking people?
I stopped being amazed by that stuff when a guy I worked with got fired for videotaping him getting a blowjob at work on a company phone by a coworker. I think he was married, she wasn't, and then showing it to fellow coworkers. That actually happened in a place I worked.
You're
right. He's not an FBI agent.
Right.
Was a part-time server at the steakhouse around the corner. But I know what you're saying.
It's amazing.
I just want to get that story.
Well, not that is an amazing level of stupidity, but it blows my mind. You have these people that are to get to where he was at. Had to have been a smart guy. Had to have been able to cross T's and dot I's.
How many times do I say that?
Right.
Smart people say this, and you're like, whoa.
Right, but then you have this. It's just like, why is that a text message that you would put across your phone? It blows my mind. Just the lack of,
Common sense?
Yes, exactly. The lack of common sense. And so what that leads to is my issue here is, what if all things would have been the same, but he would have either talked about how much he loved Trump or how much he hated Obama or Hillary Clinton? Then would this be an issue? Would he need to be removed?
I don't know, but the fact is he was removed. And the fact that the right wing,
and that right there should be the end of it.
It should be,
right? Like, it should tell you
exactly how Mueller is like, okay, if you're, whether it's you're making bad decisions or playing too much politics, we can't have you in this investigation.
Did you see the text, by the way? So I think I saw something last night.
I heard it read. I did not see it.
I know Fox News, like, they had like breaking news that they had this story.
It was something to the extent of, this guy's a fucking moron. He's awful, referring to Trump. I can't believe this guy is in the race, but he's actually in it. He could actually win. This is obviously during the campaign. So, I mean, it was politically charged, but I would bet you, if you looked at the average political makeup of people at that level of the FBI and DOJ, I'm guessing they're largely going to lean right. People whine about the liberal media, and we can go back and forth about that if we want. But I do not believe for a second that the investigation going on into Russian meddling has anything to do with an anti-Trump or pro-Clinton bias. And I did something that you would not have approved of. I turned to your boy Andrew Wilkow today for a little bit, and he was melting the fuck down. It was beautiful. He was freaking out about how it's obvious that the Democrats are actually the ones working with the Russians. And I don't know why he's got the Rush Limbaugh voice, but it's the only one I do. But it was comical. I mean, he is in near meltdown. And, of course, that made me smile.
Yeah, there were a lot of Republicans in a very milder version of where Democrats were after the 2016 election.
That is an awesome analogy.
Right. I mean,
because
it's just, I mean, that's just where
Roy
where
Moore was going to strut into the end zone and then,
right, I mean,
stripped at the one and picked up and run the other way.
I mean, they had a slam dunk guaranteed win and they blew it.
This is the equivalent of the Alabama field goal attempt that got returned at the end of the game by,
right.
That's great an obscure game. Reference. If you get that reference, it's a good one. If you don't, sorry, but it was a great game and an incredible turn of events.
But it just, that's where a lot of your conservative radio talk show people are, who believed that the rhetoric momentum from 2016 would carry over. I think that there were, if you go back and you look, there were enough flags to say, all right, maybe it's not quite the slam dunk that we thought, but listen, this was a toss-up. There's no one who, the people I go to that I trust for, analysis of these situations wouldn't give me an answer. People who get paid.
Are these friends or these media figures?
Combinations.
Okay.
People who just say, listen, I can't give you anything. I don't know. I mean,
what's amazing are people have the brains and balls to admit they don't know something.
Yeah.
I mean, there's so many people who are like, clearly this is a victory for the Clintons. Well, no, it's not.
Right.
I mean, I know you want to believe that.
But it's not. And so, you know, there were just, this was such an obscure kind of outlier of a situation, which is why I think, congratulations, Democrats, that you got a victory and you've got a few victories in a row. But you can't hang your hat on this. You can't rest on your laurels because this was such a unique situation. And you're going to have to, you know, and pretty much going forward, I think both parties have to learn that you can't make assumptions on who your voter base is. You can't make assumptions that just because you won X, you'll win Y. Both parties are going to have to continue to be creative and recreate momentum. And they're going to have to actually appeal to a voter base.
Another thing I think I would really like to see much, much more of is parties stop quitting in places that you don't see as a likely or slam dunk place.
Well, yeah, right? I mean
Doug Moore would. Doug Jones was a stick this guy in there because he's going to lose, and then all of a sudden it was a game. If they would have put money and effort into that in the beginning, it might have been a slam dunk once the first 14-year-old came out and said, or first woman came out and said, this happened when I was 14. I mean, Howard Dean lost his presidential possibilities by going, 16 years ago, whatever.
Well, I think, again, this was a unique animal.
It was a win on a very unfavorable playground.
It was, but I don't think them putting money into this prior to the molestation accusations and the pedophilia accusations, I don't know if that necessarily you build up any ground, if it gives you any additional momentum. And the reason why is because up until that point, it was status quo Alabama.
Right.
Right. And then once you had those allegations come out, and then once you realize how flawed of a candidate this guy is, and the quotes start coming out about what he said about making America great again, and then the amendments, and you know, like him riding into town on a horse.
How do we wait that long to get...
You know, I mean, just insane. So I think, you know, this is what I'll tell Democrats. This is, you know what we learned? You got to appeal to the black fucking vote, Democrats. Or Republicans, right? Like, you want to win an election. We're 13% of the population, all right? But what's the percentage that candidates are winning by in these elections, right? Less than 5%, right?
And so, in this case, less than 2. I mean,
right, and typically, you don't get a great turnout from the black population, and the reason is no one actually really tries to appeal to blacks,
and that's
right?
I'm not saying
minorities. I am saying the blacks, African Americans, Negroes, whatever you want to call us. You're not appealing to us, right? You're saying fucking buzzwords and shit that you were using 20 years ago, and you'll do a round of radio. You'll do Sharpton show. Maybe you'll go on Joe Madison show. You go on CNN and you go to a black church. You'll talk about how you like hot sauce and you love Jay-Z, and you'll have him, you know, at a rally for you, and then you'll say, all right, well, we did our job. We appealed to the black vote, right? And then everybody can't figure out why black people don't go and show up to vote, right? Because you didn't do shit. All you did was the same shit you've been doing over and over and over again. And, oh, by the way, once you get in office, then the bullshit that you've been promising that you've actually never followed through on from the beginning just goes to the wayside. So it's interesting that, you know, this time they said, oh, shit, listen, we need them.
How much? How much do you think the Barkley effect came in? Because I think it mattered. No. Oh, I think it did.
No,
you don't think so?
No.
Chuck. I love Chuck. You know, I love Chuck.
I know you love him, and I would love to say, oh, he had this great.
I think he mattered for a few reasons.
No, let me tell you what happened. What the Democratic Party did was they actually did what they're supposed to do and what they should do in every election. They got on the ground. Cory Booker, who's a senator from fucking New Jersey, flew into Alabama.
Yeah.
and went door to door and went to churches and went to businesses in black neighborhoods and black cities, right? They had people.
Barkley was going around to town halls and stuff.
Okay.
Hey, now, come on. He matters.
He doesn't.
Okay.
And he doesn't, right? I mean, like, what matters is those, you know, those pockets of, you know, those pockets of the black population in Alabama were flooded with other black people, right? They didn't go and say, oh, give us some white millennials from fucking UC Berkeley or whatever. They went in with people who looked like the people who were that they needed to vote, and they talked to them and they said, this is where you need to go to register to vote. This is why we're saying you need to vote for this guy. They get, like, they went in and they did a grassroots campaign and they converted people, right? And that's what mobilized voters in Alabama, black voters in Alabama.
I totally agree. I just think Barkley was part of that mobilization.
Oh my God! Stop.
Why are you so? I mean, I mean, he's a hero from that fucking state. He's not. He's from Alabama. Okay. He's a fucking celebrity.
He's a celebrity from Alabama.
I
won't fight you on it. I'm sure he had an impact. I'm sure Charles, between
his
ego.
14 points, 12 rebounds, and 3 assists.
There you go. Charles Barkley had an impact. But the reality was what happened on the ground for the last 6 weeks in Alabama with the effort that they put in. All right. Cory Booker helped. Barkley helped.
Okay, I agree. But, I was going to name Booker next, actually, as the.
But the truth, I think, what really pulled this over the hump was the actual effort by the party strategizing and thinking, how do we get people off the couch into the polls? How do we do that? And it's not going to be by sending the white kids from UC Berkeley that are, you know, pissed off liberal millennials. No, we need people that these people trust and relate to. And they sent them in, and they sent them in educated and ready to teach, to and not just teach on the issues, but every single obstacle that people were going to have voting in Alabama, with whether the polls closed early or if they needed to register to vote, and if
where to register
and how to get there. Those are the things that mattered. Right. And those and having people there to say, listen, if you see X, Y, and Z at the polls, if you see a police officer there swinging a baton, asking for IDs, you need to call this number. You need to use this app. You know, and technology was another big part of this. There were apps that you could download to help you kind of sort your way through all this. And all that combined is how you see the mobilization of a group of people that you need to vote for you.
Let me say something really, really, really cynical. Also, I think as much as the Democratic Party has typically taken the black vote for granted, I think the Republicans thought, this is one election. We don't need to do the shit we've done in the past to dissuade black votes. That's not true.
No, they absolutely tried to suppress the black vote to the point where the Secretary of State of Alabama wanted to, he sued and won the right to delete the digital readout of the votes from the voting machines almost immediately after the election.
What do you mean? Delete the...
So they have digital, like, so you put your vote on a sheet of paper.
Right.
And then you submit that into a machine.
You're right.
The machine gives a digital readout afterwards.
Right.
Right. That digital readout is what they use to produce the record.
Yes.
Well, the Secretary of State said, as soon as the election's over, we want to delete that. Doug Jones, a Republican, an independent, and someone else all sued and said, no, we want to keep that. And the reason why in the past Alabama has done that, they deleted it, and then they haven't been able to go back and do a recount. Right, because okay. I mean, or they, because if you doing it digitally is a hell of a lot cheaper than getting people to do it paper. Sure. And then if you have to do a recount by paper, then you can argue against it and say we don't have the money to do it. Right, so they've been able to avoid recounts basically by saying we don't have the money to do a recount. Right, and certain people have been put in the office under less than reputable circumstances, right? So this time, I mean,
the recount of 2000 is one of the most amazing political events of my lifetime. I know our age difference comes into play a little bit there, but it was, well, I was crazy. 20
years old.
Right? I was.
In 2000?
Yeah.
I was 20.
Okay.
I was born in 1980.
Okay. So it's easy for your math's good. Yep.
All right. Easy for me to figure out how old I was.
I was 29.
So, you know, I mean, I just, so the idea that they weren't trying, I mean, now here's the deal.
But in the past, there have been some really aggressive, like,
well, I mean,
like you said, batons and misinformation, you know, come out and vote on Wednesday shit, getting pushed around.
Well,
and maybe that still happened. It just got overcome this time. And that's huge.
Right. I mean, the reality, Alabama is still Alabama, right? And I mean, there's a reason why people are upset that a lot of the stuff in the Voting Rights Act was shot down by the Supreme Court, because these states still, you know, I mean, you have people that are still alive that were part of, you know, the fight against integration, you know, that are still in government seats that, you know, they're just like, oh, shit, y'all done lifted the rules. We are back.
Well, you know? Another thing about Doug Jones that maybe helped, what Doug Jones's signature moment was prosecuting KKK.
Yeah, that blew up the church and killed the four girls. Absolutely. And that was...
And so I think maybe that made him, you know, appeal to the black vote.
Absolutely. I know people, black people in Alabama who said, listen, when we found out that Doug Jones is running for Senate, he had our vote. And it wasn't because he was a Democrat. It wasn't because of Roy Moore and him being a pedophile. It's because they, you know, that wasn't that long ago that church was blown up and those girls were killed. So there are a lot of people who remember that vividly and clearly. And for them, you know, they had kind of gotten to a point where they thought things were a little bit better in the South, and then that happens, and you realize, you know what, we actually haven't accomplished anything if this can still happen. But then for him to be able to prosecute and to successfully prosecute the people who were responsible, that gave people in the state of Alabama hope that things were going to get better, that they weren't going to continue to be persecuted and terrorized in their homes, in their home states, in their places of worship.
And by the way, the number one attack on Doug Jones was, he's soft on crime. If I'm a black person, I'm thinking, fuck you.
Right. And that's the crazy part. Like, let's play this out logically. What was this guy's job? What did he do? Like, I mean, the idea that he was soft on crime, like, listen, Doug Jones is probably more of a Republican than Donald Trump is.
True.
Right? I mean, you know, and Doug Jones...
In the traditional definition,
sure. In the traditional true conservative definition, but, I mean, he, you know, I mean, let's be honest here. And Doug Jones, like, the big thing about him for conservatives is his stance on abortion. His stance on abortion is choice.
Right.
You know, I mean, and I think that it's probably something that in his personal realm, and I don't know, I mean, now we're getting into a weird place where you're trying to figure out what's in someone's head and heart, but... You know, he's a believer in choice, and that's it. You know, and where conservatives just believe that, you know, they're anti-abortion. Now you can,
you know, my conversation with the girls at the bar last night, one of them said something that I've said many times, and I was glad to hear. No one is pro-abortion. No one thinks abortion is a good thing. The question is whether or not you think there is a point at which a woman should make a choice for her body or not. And I struggle with this a lot morally, but I also know that the solution is not to make abortion a crime, because one of the few true things that Trump said during the campaign was, if you make it illegal, then someone having an abortion is committing a crime and should be criminally prosecuted. The way to solve the abortion issue is education, honesty, making birth control, and again, education, readily available, affordable birth control. Nobody wants to get pregnant and terminate a pregnancy. I'm going to go on a total tangent here, but everyone recognizes no one is happy when an abortion happens. So let's be honest, let's be adults, and let's be 2017 and say, let's give people of the right age the ability to learn how to avoid getting an unwanted pregnancy. let's make the ability to make that not happen readily available. I'm a 46-year-old man who's been sexually active for 26 years, and yes, when you do the math, that's depressing for some of us, but I've never impregnated anybody, and it hasn't been that hard to avoid. Is that too much, too personal?
Yeah, because, I mean, it sounds like your fish don't swim.
Fuck you.
26 years?
I wrap it up. I don't know. I make sure there's a goalie in place. I'm not trying to get one past the goalie.
I hate goalies.
All right, you know what? Fuck you. I was trying to do a good public service announcement. It's and awful. You're making, okay, no. You, all right.
You made you this talking worse. About your 26-year sex life or whatever.
Well, the fact that awful. I'm 46 years old is the awful part because it meant.
Yes. I can do math. I get it.
Okay. All right. You know what? We have some foreign affairs issue to talk about, but let's just punt on that. It's late. I feel like drinking some more whiskey and not trying to stay coherent. And talking about my shitty sex life until I was 20 is not a great way to end a show. So let's talk about this fucking chip challenge. It's been accepted. Getting these Pocky chips is very hard. I think I found an alternative source for a Carolina Reaper chip. We're not sure where we're going to do this yet, but it is coming. I'm not ducking the awful Twitter poll. So we will keep you updated if you want to. If anyone has access to the Pocky Reaper chips, we're open to that. Otherwise, we will outsource and we will put in controls to prove that I'm not ducking this. We are at Whiskey Congress on social media. You can email Jim at Whiskey Congress, Steve at Whiskey Congress. Our website's undergoing some renovations, so please stay in touch with that and see that evolve.
It's up and running, but it's going some renovations, so we're hoping for
more connectivity.
Yes, indeed.
All right, man. You good?
I am good.
Then we are out. Thanks a lot, folks. Yep.